Kieran, good morning.
Good morning, Sean.
Thanks very much for joining us on the program this morning. In your work, absolute pleasure. In your work as an architect, you've noted that many remote Indigenous communities are currently littered with failed attempts at housing innovation. Why is this the case?
Well, I think one of the things that's important to understand about housing in Indigenous communities in particular is that it's been subject to a huge pendulum swing in funding policy and government policy over many, many decades. And what we see in this cycle is a sort of swing towards a kind of rush to build mentality when there's a pot of money and suddenly targets to be delivered. And then a very poor implementation, ongoing maintenance, and in a sense follow-up once those housing projects have been built. And what tends to happen is that there's the push and the pressure to build to certain targets, which are set often, you know, in outside of the communities that are being served, means that people come in with what they call innovation and don't really learn lessons from the past. And the article that I published in The Conversation yesterday is really just to say that there are a lot of lessons that can be learned in terms of housing that we need to follow, and we need to ensure that we're not responding as if it's the first time that we've ever done something like this in remote Indigenous communities. There is a wealth of information that needs to be utilised, and I've pointed to some of those in the article. There's a huge amount of research that's been done over the last sort of 30 years by groups such as Health Habitat and supported by people, organisations like Tropo Architects in the NT or the Centre for Appropriate Technology in Alice Springs, that need to be, in a sense, incorporated and understood and mandated for any new housing work.
How does housing actually underpin so many of the key targets that have been set out in the Closing the Gap report?
Well, Closing the Gap, you know, has seven targets. I'm not a sort of an expert in a sense on all of the policy settings, but if you look at most of those targets around child mortality, education, school attendance, life expectancy, these are underpinned by the ability for people to live in healthy and safe homes. And without the ability to live in a safe and healthy house, it's very difficult to achieve many of those targets. And, you know, I'll give you an example of communities that I've worked at in the Kimberley in Western Australia where, you know, children find it very difficult to be able to get a good night's sleep. There's severe overcrowding in houses. The conditions within the houses mean that children are, you know, it's very difficult to maintain a level of hygiene if the plumbing's not working or there's no adequate bathing facilities for babies, for example. And so you end up with a series of sort of knock-on health effects which can then impact on things such as schooling. So without a kind of, I guess, a clear mandate to deliver better and healthier and safer housing in these communities, it's going to be very difficult to start pulling back some of the Closing the Gap targets. And, you know, we've seen over the last 10 years really a very, very little progress against most of those targets. And in terms of, you know, some of the key ones, such as child mortality and education, employment, etc., you know, actually the gaps are getting worse.
In building housing for remote communities, you've stated that much can actually be learnt from the mainstream Australian housing market. Do you mind explaining that to us?
Look, I think one of the things that I've pointed out in the article is that most houses that people live in sort of, I guess, contemporary Australia are very, and I'm talking primarily about the mass housing market here, not so much around apartments and those sorts of things, which are, I guess, a slightly newer invention in the Australian landscape. But one of the examples I point out in the article is that the housing in Western Australia that were built, you know, around the time of the First World War, and houses really haven't changed radically apart from, say, some size and a little bit of technology since that time. They're still built in Western Australia in double brick, with tiles, the windows, the trades are organised in a certain way. And the kind of history of housing in Australia, apart from the sort of the vast size of the houses, has really sort of been a story of incremental evolution over time. And, you know, there's a lot of lessons that can be learned. Trades become very efficient. There's an understanding and a broad industry around that incremental growth and evolution of housing design and construction. Whereas what we see because of that pendulum swing that I mentioned earlier in Indigenous housing is that there is suddenly a crisis. There is a sort of sudden rush of money or an intervention. People then have to respond within a very short time frame, and all sorts of what I guess become labelled as innovations come out of the woodwork, and we end up delivering very poor quality houses without an understanding of context or the communities they're serving, and then walk away. And I guess there is a lot to be learned by the kind of slow and gradual incremental evolution in mainstream housing, I think. And you know, one of the things I say in the article is that the mainstream housing market in Australia is underpinned by a set of guidelines, actually controlled through COAG, called the Building Code. And it's a mandated guideline in terms of how dwellings in particular are built and the kind of standards we expect of them. And I just don't see why we don't have something like that, in a sense, given the evidence base that's occurred within Indigenous housing. We used to have something like that. It was called the National Indigenous Housing Guide, and the last time it was updated was in 2007, and it's been due for an update since 2009 and hasn't been touched. And, you know, I think in many respects, there are so many elements within that guide that need to be brought up to speed and then mandated to make sure that we don't make the same mistakes we've made in the past.
Well, Kieran, thank you very much. Really do appreciate you joining us, having a bit of a chat with us about on this topic.
No problem. My pleasure.